Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, starting with the first article from the Midland Reporter-Telegram front page, Friday, October 23rd, 2020. Energy. Mad Money host Cramer calls Pioneer investable. By Stuart Doreen. What is the reaction of the investment community to Pioneer's acquisition of Parsley this week? If comments from Jim Cramer of CNBC's Mad Money are any indication, Pioneer Natural Resources is a company that is investable. Mad Money, according to the show's website, is for people who own stocks and feel like they're on the outside looking in, become better investors. And after talking with Pioneer CEO Scott Sheffield and Parsley CEO Matt Gallagher, Cramer said, "It's the one that I'm going to be talking about from now. Everybody else, listen up, because this is the one to buy if you want one in the oil patch." Indeed, Sheffield's and Gallagher's appearances Wednesday on the afternoon financial news show didn't seem to be as much about celebrating a merger as it was to convince viewers of the investment opportunity. After Pioneer and Parsley agreed to an all-stock deal valued at $4.5 billion. Yeah, Jim, really, it's all about putting the best two Permian Basin companies with the best inventory together and creating a larger company with a better free cash flow profile, Sheffield said. As you know, I've been on record last year adopting the free cash flow profile for the investor model, slowing your growth down and increasing your free cash flow in regard to a base dividend, which we have. Both companies have a strong base, but I introduced the variable dividend concept. Most of our shareholders love the variable dividend, and by bringing the two companies together, we create a better company with a better free cash flow profile and a better and increased variable dividend. Sheffield later said, with the price of oil at $40 a barrel, we're all making money. But the merger allows investors a greater return and some protection if the price drops. We can actually grow 5% a year and pay our base dividend and have it break even at $35 West Texas Intermediate, Sheffield said. While Sheffield was talking about dividends, Gallagher said that those money managers worried about ESG, environmental, social, and governance, could get behind the merger. Cramer said Gallagher taught him a lot about ESG. And that one day oil could be liked by those worried about flaring and global warming. Gallagher said ESG was absolutely instrumental in this deal and that the deal accelerates all of our strategic objectives, which are to allocate capital to the low end of the cost and emissions curves and increases our free cash flow. We're going to pay down debt. Our strategy was to pay down debt to peer-leading leverage while increasing return of capital to shareholders in June. And this hits and accelerates all of those strategic objectives 18 to 24 months ahead of schedule. Gallagher later said the industry must put the pollution problem front and center and get there very aggressively. He said investors are worried about perception, pollution, and profit. And we're going to deliver those three in spades in this combined entity. And the rest of the industry better get with it, or the train is going to move by pretty quickly. We have to deliver better financial results in a highly environmentally friendly manner, Gallagher said.
This article is entitled, "Foo Reports Bomb Threats, Calls for HOA to Take Action," by Stuart Doreen. Midland pastor Bob Foo reported in a letter to the Polo Park Homeowners Association that he and his family have experienced bomb threats. He also called for the association to consider, quote, any and all legal or other measures, unquote, to remove protesters from the North Midland neighborhood. Foo wrote in the letter, dated October 22nd, that Thursday marked the 18th straight day of nonstop protests harassment in front of his home. It has been reported that demonstrations have taken place with signs and pamphlets accusing Fu of being a spy for the Chinese Communist Party. Fu previously told the Reporter Telegram he believes the protesters are acting on the direction of Miles Guo, an exiled Chinese businessman. In his letter to the HOA, Fu said the protesters, quote, were mobilized by an outsider from New York City for harassment and threats in order to silence our work for advancing freedom and human rights in China, unquote. Fu runs the nonprofit China Aid and serves as a pastor at Mid-City's Community Church. He sent the letter to the Reporter Telegram on Thursday. He offered the following in the letter. Yesterday, we received multiple bomb threats on the media platform of the harassment campaign called Voice of Guo Media. Multiple messages and posters were posted on that platform calling members of New Federal State of China to walk, go to bomb CCP bandits, with my photo attached. The one who posted these messages even held images of multiple detonators, exploder, percussion caps on his palm. He then requested the board take action. As part of the victims of this harassment campaign, herein I formally request you and the board to convene an emergency board meeting to consider any and all legal or other measures available to protect our peace and safety of our home and neighborhood. The City of Midland, the State of Texas, and relevant federal authorities should be demanded by our HOA to have these protesters engage in their activities in a designated protest area in the city limit, such as a park. To continue the current way of large gatherings by nearly 100 strangers from out of our own community daily constitutes nuisance, disrupting, and threatening of our family members, especially children, Fu wrote. This article is entitled, Mayor's Plea for Patience. Peyton, Let's Be Disciplined in Fight Against COVID, by Stuart Doreen. Mayor Patrick Peyton said Thursday that Midlanders need to be disciplined in their actions as the community goes through another spike in coronavirus cases. He said during a media call that Midlanders need to get back to what they have done before as cases spike in Midland and around the region. The Midland Health Department reported Thursday a fourth straight day of 100-plus cases inside Midland County. The statistics through 4 days show Midland County has set a new weekly record for the number of cases. The region has been impacted, especially when it comes to hospitalized patients, according to Midland health officials. It was reported Thursday that 27 of the 36 patients in the critical care unit are COVID patients, and that all of those COVID patients were on ventilators. It was also reported there were another 26 COVID patients hospitalized, bringing the total COVID population up to 53. That is up from 47 earlier in the week. And 21 of those patients are from outside the county: Waco, Spearman, Big Spring, Stanton, Pecos, Crane, Snyder, Alpine, Dumas, which is north of Amarillo, and Hobbs, New Mexico. We have to once again preach this message of vigilance and taking care of one another and taking care of ourselves, Peyton said. Peyton said that even though 98% of those who test positive don't require hospitalization, the current difficulties in Midland and within the region are stressing healthcare facilities and supplies. He encouraged Midlanders to be patient with one another and with one's arguments and discussions about what might be the right things to do. He talked about unintended consequences of high coronavirus counts, hospitalizations, and deaths across the region, state, and nation. He said all residents must double down on efforts so we can get back to some form of normalcy. And normalcy is needed, he said, as the pandemic is wreaking havoc on alcoholism rates, those with addiction issues, the divorce rate, and the number of people, including children, being abused. I don't think there's anybody on this call, including myself, who hasn't in one way, shape, or another found themselves not only fatigued, but being lax and then having to snap ourselves back into the discipline that we need to be in, Peyton said. When asked about his declaration on September 17th in front of Tall City Brewery that Midland was open for business and his call out to state leaders to further open up the economy, including bars, Peyton said he doesn't regret the message whatsoever. He said he believes it is a, quote, fair argument, unquote, that efforts to reopen might have contributed to a spike. But would I do it again? Absolutely. And so we have to put this message out again. We've done it once. We've done it twice. We're just going to have to do it a third time. This is the Local and Nation page. This article is entitled Health Department, Fourth Day with 100-plus Cases by Stuart Doreen. Another day, another 100-plus new coronavirus cases reported in Midland County. The Midland Health Department on Thursday reported the fourth straight day of 100-plus coronavirus cases, setting a new record for consecutive days with 100 or more cases and a new record for the number of coronavirus cases in a week. The 431 cases reported so far this week is more than the 418 from July 19th to the 25th. This week marks the third time during the pandemic that 400 or more cases have been reported in a week. The total through Thursday is 200 more than the total through Thursday of last week. I cannot stress enough the mitigation efforts that we must continue to follow, said Whitney Craig during Thursday's press conference about the spike in cases. And we've beat them in, and I will beat them in again. Maintain your social distance, wear your mask, keep your hands and high-touch surfaces clean. And now there's the added recommendation of getting your flu shot. This can be scheduled at the Health Department by calling 432-681-7613. As a reminder, at the Health Department, we are seeing patients by appointment only. So please call and make sure you can keep you and your family up to date on the required and recommended vaccines. Thursday's new cases are reflective of lab results from Tuesday, according to the Health Department. On Thursday, the Health Department reported 1,740 active cases, an increase of 15 compared to Wednesday, and 2,797 recoveries, an increase of 89. The number of COVID-19-related deaths in Midland County stayed at 89. As a resident of Midland, we have the power to control our numbers, Craig said. It's all in what we do as a community, members, and neighbors. 2020 has been a rough year, and we're all tired, but we can get through this. We can only do this if we approach mitigation as a community. We know what we need to do, and we can keep doing it. This article is entitled Gourmet Tacos and Sliders Restaurant Coming to Midland by Caitlin Randall. The Rig Restaurant is moving forward with plans 5 years in the making to bring gourmet tacos, sliders, and a full bar to Midland. The Midland City Council on Tuesday passed the first reading of an ordinance for a specific use designation that will allow the sale of alcohol at the property located on Starboard Drive near Woody's Hideaway and Toro's Cafe. The ordinance needs a second reading to be approved. The applicant for the zone change, the Rig Tacos and Sliders Inc., first became a corporation in August of 2015, according to public records. A Facebook page for the restaurant states they will offer tacos, sliders, nachos, and customizable appetizers. There will be an 1,875-square-foot dining room and 360-square-foot patio, according to a floor plan included with the application submitted to the City Council. The restaurant will be located at what was previously Cafe Nitro. An opening date was originally planned for summer 2018, but was delayed because of contractor issues, according to the Facebook page. The owner of the restaurant did not immediately respond to a request for information on the new opening date.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, October 23, 2020. Tennis Center announcement. Jim Henry was among those who attended the announcement on Wednesday that Pioneer Natural Resources donated 3 acres of land for the Bush Ace Athletic Center, an expansion of the Bush Tennis Center. Henry's chairman of Henry Resources and donated the land for the tennis center. Early voting continues. Early voting for the November 3 general election continues through October 30 at 5 voting centers across Midland. County Annex, 2110 North A Street, today, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Sunday, 1 to 6 p.m. Calvary Assembly of God, 908 Johnston Street, MCPL Centennial Branch, 2503 West Loop 250 North, Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 3818 North Midland Drive, St. Paul's Methodist Church, 4501 Thomason Drive. Today, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday, 1 to 6 p.m. Early voting totals. Monday, 3,509. Tuesday, 3,612. Wednesday, 3,160. Thursday, 2,865. October 13, 3,259. October 14, 3,330. October 15, 3,399. October 16, 3,780. Mail-in ballots, 2,738. Total, 29,653. City Hall to be closed to the public. In an effort to increase social distancing and prevent community spread of COVID-19, the City of Midland will be closing City Hall to the public starting Monday until further notice. All other city facilities will remain open and operational, according to a press release from the city spokeswoman. For contact information for a specific department and up-to-date information regarding COVID-19, go to midlandtexas.gov. MC Plans FAFSA Workshop. Midland College will host a workshop designed to assist students with the financial aid application process and the free application for federal student aid form, FAFSA. The workshop will be held 9 a.m. Saturday at the Cogdell Learning Center, 201 West Florida Avenue. Students participating in the workshop should bring the following: Social Security and driver's license numbers, 2019 tax records, records of any untaxed income, records of assets, and alien registration number, if applicable. The workshop is free. Because of social distancing requirements, students may only bring one person with them. Face masks are required. For more information, contact Josie Samagi at 432-686-4903 or email jsamagui at midland.edu. Today's deadline to enter pumpkin contest. Noon today is the deadline to enter the Literary Pumpkin Contest sponsored by the Midland County Public Library. Midlanders of all ages may enter a pumpkin decorated as a book character. Participants should not carve the pumpkins, according to a press release from the library. Entries may be dropped off at either branch. Winners in four age categories, 4 through 7, 8 through 12, 13 through 17, and adult, will be announced via Facebook Live at the beginning of the library's Fall Festival, which begins at 4 p.m. Saturday. Prizes include gift certificates from Domino's Pizza, Fiddlesticks Farms, Museum of the Southwest, and Whataburger. City to host Halloween Fest. The City of Midland Parks and Recreation Division will host the 8th Annual Halloween Fest 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday at the park next to Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center, 2300 Butternut Lane. Local businesses, churches, and organizations may set up a booth to hand out candy. No games will be allowed this year in order to keep a steady flow of traffic. The city will give out prizes for the best decorated booth. The city expects more than 1,000 kids for the event. For more information and to reserve a spot, contact Joey Jolly at jajolly at midlandtexas.gov or 685-7379.
This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled Pioneer's Donation of Land Could Lead to Unique Sports Venue by editor Stuart Doreen. Thank you to Pioneer Natural Resources for donating land for what is expected to become the Bush Ace Athletic Center in Northwest Midland. This donation demonstrates the continued commitment that Pioneer has made in our region and city. While we know the oil industry is going through uncertain times when it comes to mergers and acquisitions, we know there will be larger companies such as Pioneer and Chevron leading the way when it comes to philanthropy. And the Permian Strategic Partnership remains focused on investments that will help our city and region when it comes to the development needed. This week, though, we learned about an athletic center that, as proposed, would include 5 indoor basketball courts, a 50-yard indoor turf field, and a high-performance training and fitness center. It will sit next to the Bush Tennis Center, which opened in 2013, and added to the list of athletic facilities that make Midland unlike few metropolitan areas in the region. The Bush ACE, Advise, Counsel, and Encourage program, will take place through partnerships with UTPB, Baylor, and Texas A&M Athletics. We are extremely excited to make a donation to the Bush Tennis Center that will go toward creating a new multi-purpose athletic facility for residents of the Permian Basin, says Pioneer's Vice President of Permian Affairs, Susan A. Spratlin. Pioneer is dedicated to giving back to the communities in which we live and work, and we feel this will be a great addition to the region. Bush Tennis Center officials stated in a press release that Pioneer has a proud historical partnership with the Bush Tennis Center, having contributed more than $1.2 million in assistance ranging from initial capital development, in-kind site preparation, gazebo and opportunity park construction, and key event sponsorships. The land donated is valued at $520,000. Mark Berg, Executive Vice President, Corporate Operations for Pioneer, added, "The additional land donation is another way we can assist an organization that impacts the youth in our community. It has been great to see the growth and success of the center over the years, and we will look forward to witnessing the additional impact and options the athletic center will offer for our Permian families. Our community should be proud of its relationship with the oil industry, especially considering the generosity of those companies that have given back over and over again. Pioneer is one of those companies. Pioneer has made Midland a better place." Laurels for Patrick Payton. Midland's mayor reminded us we have to be responsible for what we are going to do when it comes to coronavirus if we don't want to have a fight with Austin or somewhere else. He also said we have to take control of our own destiny. "The wearing of masks is something you are going to have to do," the mayor said. "You know the right things to do." He reminded us to be patient and that our hospital is under tremendous pressure. But mostly, he asked Midlanders to embrace the fight and help the community to get through this for the third time. This is the obituary column, Friday, October 23rd, 2020. Neely Beatrice Polk. Neely Beatrice Polk, 79, gained her wings on October 13th, 2020. Arrangements for Neely Polk are under the direction of Jackie Warren Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. October 24th at Mount Rose Baptist Church, 211 North Tyler, Midland, Texas. Neely was born July 22, 1941 in Denison, Texas, to Samuel Green Jones and Mattie Tucker. Neely is survived by her older brother, James Jones, and wife, Pauline Jones of Houston. Her sons L.C. Polk Jr., Damon Polk, Eric Polk, and Darren Polk, all of Midland, and a host of cousins, nieces, nephews, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Neely was preceded in death by her late husband L.C. Polk Sr., her mother and father Samuel Green Jones and Mattie Tucker, her sister Elizabeth Cooper, and her brother Samuel Jones II. Becky Elizabeth Carter. Becky Elizabeth Carter was surrounded by her daughters when she went to meet her Savior on Wednesday, October 21st, 2020. Becky was born in Amarillo on July 1st, 1955, to Dorothy and Bill Steinman. Becky is preceded in death by her parents, Dorothy and Bill Steinman, her brother William Steinman, and the father of her children, Ken Carter. She is survived by her oldest daughter, Kristen Landon Brockman, Casey Scott Lunson, her granddaughters Quinn and Ryan, her three sisters Kathy, Jimmy Friedman, Debbie, Peter Bartell, and Linda Dawn Thompson, as well as many nieces and nephews and very close friends. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, October 24th at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. In lieu of flowers, please make a donation to a local animal shelter in her memory. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Dolores D. Marie Ehlers Meek. Dolores D. Marie Ehlers Meek went to be with her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on October 14, 2020. She was a beloved wife, mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother. Dolores was born to John and Bonita Ehlers on October 26, 1934, in Pipestone, Minnesota. She married Don Meek, the love of her life, on November 15, 1952, in Seattle, Washington, and relocated to Texas shortly after. She was preceded in death by her parents, husband Don, sister Marilyn Daniels, brother Larry Ehlers, and nephew Jason Ehlers. She is survived by her sister Valerie Ehlers and children, son Don Meek Jr. and wife Jamie, daughter Bonnie Swanson and husband Bud, and son John Meek, and many grandchildren, 21 great-grandchildren and one great-grandson. She was a loving other mother to her many nieces and nephews and so many others that she embraced as her own. A celebration of Dee's life will be held on Saturday, October 24th at 2 p.m. at Grace Lutheran Church, 3000 West Golf Course Road, Midland, with a final earthly farewell to follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Frances Ellis. Frances Ellis, 84, of Midland, was reunited with her beloved husband in heaven on October 20th, 2020. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m., Thursday, October 22nd, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m., Friday, October 23rd, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Frances was born on May 6, 1936, in Midland, Texas, to Charlie Lay and Vera West Lay. Frances is survived by her children, Terry Oliver of Greenwood, Sandra Ellis Wills, and husband Doug of Greenwood, and John Ellis of Greenwood, 7 grandchildren. Frances is also survived by her 7 great-grandchildren and numerous nieces and nephews. Frances is preceded in death by her husband Kenneth, her grandson K.C. Parker, her brother Kenneth Lay, and her son Guy Ellis. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Harold R. Briscoe. Harold R. Briscoe, 96, of Midland, Texas, passed away on October 18, 2020, at Midland Memorial Hospital. Harold was born on December 12, 1923, to William and Thelma Irene Feister Briscoe in Rising Star, Texas. He married Josephine Ella Joella Dornack on June 1, 1954, in Jordanton, Texas. He is survived by his spouse, Joella Briscoe of Midland, 4 children, Dennis A. Briscoe, Lori of Midland, Melissa B. Redden, Michael of Houston, Brian J. Briscoe, Ruth of Durango, Colorado, and Anita M. Jerrigan, J. of Monahans, 8 grandchildren, and 6 great-grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his parents, Thelma Irene Feister Phillips, and William Robert Briscoe, his stepfather George Phillips, and one sister Louise Glasscock. Visitation will be held on Friday, October 23rd, from 5 to 7 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services will be on Saturday, October 24th, at 11 a.m. at the American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial service will take place at American Heritage Cemetery. Services will be held outdoors under a shaded pavilion, and masks are required. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that donations in memory of Harold can be made to Helping Hands of Midland, 1301 Brinson Lane, Midland, 79703. Donations may also be made online at helpinghandsmidland.com.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, October 23rd, 2020. Section A. Local Cases and Hospitalizations Rise, by Michael Merlot. Medical Center Hospital detailed some changes coming for patient visitation and diversion of patients following a reported rise in Ector County COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations. During a Thursday virtual hospital briefing, the rising cases were a concern. We are seeing a high patient census, including COVID and non-COVID patients from within and outside Ector County, an MCH press release detailed. It has driven us to make some decisions today that we are going to have to do some changes and move back into the situation we were in back in June and July as far as visitors and some surgeries, MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said. As of 1:30 p.m. Thursday, 47 COVID-19 positive patients were reportedly in the hospital at MCH, with 28 on the 4 central isolation unit, 4 in 7 central overflow unit, and 15 in the critical care unit. 11 of the CCU patients are on ventilators, and the in-hospital COVID-19 patient list includes one patient from Lincoln Tower, Odessa, 2 from Focused Care at Odessa, 1 from Siena, Odessa, 1 from Andrews, 1 from Crane, 1 from Fabens, 2 from Fort Stockton, 1 from Ira Ann, 1 from McCamey, 1 from Midland, 1 from Monahans, and 1 from Pecos. 14 of the 47 in-hospital patients are reportedly from nursing homes or are out-of-county transfers. 76 patients have pending tests, and 1,794 patients have tested positive at MCH. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said that with the increase to in-hospital and community cases, the hospital will be implementing parts of their surge plan. We'll be moving all of our Wheatley-Stewart procedures, which is typically your outpatient procedures, over into our main surgical space here in the campus so that we can begin preparing that area for any overflow patients that we might need to take there, as well as might monitor. MCH already has their overflow non-critical floor taking patients, she said. Timmons said that MCH will be eliminating their visitation at midnight today, which will include exceptions for pediatric patients, patients in labor, special needs patients, and end-of-life patients. Tippin added that 33 MCH employees are not working because they are either recovering from the virus or are under investigation to see if they have the virus. MCH is currently on diversion, and starting midnight Friday, MCH will be on county diversion. We are going to review that every 8 hours, he said, adding that they will be watching the number of in-hospital and outside patients. Our problem is that we're full. That's just what it gets down to. We're full of people waiting to get in here. We have not decreased the number of beds or patients that we've had. We've kept those open. Luckily, we did that because now we're able to accommodate these people. And at the same time, it has really exploded over the last couple days. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown said that as of 1 p.m. Thursday, ORMC has tested 4,305 with 571 patients testing positive. 17 positive patients are in the hospital. 11 are in the ICU, 6 are on ventilators, and of those patients, 8 are from Odessa, 5 are from Big Spring, 1 is from El Paso, 1 from Presidio, 1 from Tulia, and 1 from Lovington, New Mexico. Brown said that 7 of the 17 patients are less than 60 years old. We have one in their 20s, early 20s, two in their 30s, two in their 40s, and two in their 50s, she said. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan spoke on the rise in hospitalizations and total numbers of cases, saying that eventually those cases could start impacting hospital ability to take care of the community. He shared an executive summary of the Ector County percentage of total operational beds used for COVID-19 patients. This got all the way up to 13.76%. Remember the governor's, Greg Abbott, executive order that said this number at 15% is when some of the shutdowns start happening again. Maybe bars, maybe part of restaurants, maybe dine-in options, elective surgeries at hospitals, things like that. Saravanan said that the percentage is a moving number, and as of Thursday, 11 or 12% of total operational beds in the county are being used, which includes out-of-county residents. That's still pretty high for where we are, he said. Saravanan said that ORMC has been on diversion and hasn't loosened visitation and has been strict for the majority of the pandemic. MCH Interim Chief Medical Officer Dr. Timothy Benton said during the meeting that he has not heard from Ector County officials regarding plans if the operational bed capacity rises over 15%. Benton said the rise in cases is due to a nonspecific broad community spread, and it is within gatherings of people, large gatherings, he said, further applauding the school system for keeping attention to detail regarding mask wearing and virus precautions. Tippin spoke about holidays coming up as the weather cools in the area, saying that he thought hospitals have to prepare for more increases. Benton said that he hasn't been in on meetings regarding high-risk gatherings like local high school football games and referred questions to the local health authority, Dr. B.A. Jinadu. The ECHD website detailed that out of the total 5,986 COVID-19 cases in Ector County, 3,660 are confirmed positive cases, 2,326 are probable positive cases, and 968 cases are reportedly active. The website shows that while 4,903 people have recovered from the virus, 115 Ector County residents have reportedly died from COVID-19-related complications, and 360 patients have pending results. The website also shows a 7.68% hospitalization rate, which excludes out-of-county residents in local hospitals. Neither Jinadu or other ECHD representatives could be reached for this story. Permian High School Band Sticks to Tradition by Ruth Campbell. Band has had its share of highs and lows this year, from not knowing if they were even going to have the activity this year to performing at its first football game. Head band director Jeff Whitaker said there are 300-plus students in band this year, with more joining. Typically, he said, the whole year is planned out before the first day of school. Or before the first day of school, we meet with our students. We basically have the entire year scheduled out for us, Whitaker said. The year includes UIL, University Interscholastic League contests, Bands of America, and other competitions and events. It really kind of guides our calendars and our goals and what we rehearse and what we're working on, Whitaker said. All of the band competitions have been canceled this year, except for UIL. UIL did delay the season, and because of that delay, we weren't even allowed to start any kind of preparation for any kind of marching contest until after the 7th of September. That was a holiday. With a hybrid schedule, they looked at what was safe to do with students, which led to the question of whether they could have rehearsals. Usually there is summer band and two-a-day rehearsals, so they can teach the fundamentals. During good years, Whitaker said, they may have 3 to 4 weeks of band before the first day of school. They considered what kind of shows they could put on at a football game, and they went back to basics. Using the charts of former band directors, they have returned to spelling out Mojo and Panthers. Whitaker said, things have always gotten the audience fired up. Because of COVID restrictions, band is taught all day. Normally, we have a couple in the morning and a few in the afternoon, and then we go to our middle schools in the middle of the day. But this year, we have band every period of the day, and we did that on purpose for two reasons. One was obviously the social distancing, so that we could have less kids in a room and have a safe rehearsal, Whitaker said. The other was more with the curriculum and pedagogy. Our students missed half a semester of education last year. We weren't able to get much done at the end of last year when we were all quarantined at home. We learned some tough lessons that first time through when things got shut down. We knew it was not just band, but core classes. Kids were missing out on a lot of things. We spent weeks just trying to figure out how to reach the students. We were blindsided, and it happened during spring break for us, so that really threw us into a mix. I know the administration has talked about it from the core class side of things. We've got to get kids caught up, and we can't stop. We've got to not only catch up, but we've got to move forward too. And for us, that's been a challenge. So splitting those classes into smaller groups allows us to have a little bit more intimate time with those kids so we can focus on their individual needs. Students are strategically split, for example, by ability. It makes for a long day. We're teaching more like a middle school schedule here at the high school now with the band, at least from the teacher's perspective, he added. One of the difficulties is teaching band through Zoom. Whitaker said the main thing is they can't hear the students, and the other is a time delay, like a satellite newscast, so there's no way for us to play in sync. The only time he can hear the band play all together is outside. The only time, once everybody realized there was going to be band this year, the students bought in. Donovan Pando and Jinx Chapin, both 17-year-old seniors in band. Pando plays the saxophone, and Chapin plays flute and is a crew captain and section leader. It's different, Pando said, but we still have the sense of family that we always keep in the band, which is nice because everybody's been kind of locked up at home. It's really nice to be around people. We still have a drive, which is really cool. A lot of people lose their motivation, but we haven't. Chapin said she thinks it's been more of a challenge to stick with band this year, but seeing the directors get excited and the freshmen being able to do things makes it more bearable. 15-year-old sophomore Piper Sullivan plays bass clarinet. She agreed that the experience is different than last year. But like the other two said, it's definitely a lot better getting to go onto the field and march. It's kind of starting to get back to normal, even without competition, she said. They all said they don't mind having to take precautions or wear masks. Chapin said the format is giving the band a chance to get better and focus on fundamentals instead of having to switch gears to rehearse for shows. Whitaker said this would be a state competition year, but no other peer band is participating because it's just not practical. Permian had 2 district games in Abilene and San Angelo. Given the guidelines of 1 student per 2 seats, they would have to take 14 or 15 buses. Those are tough calls to make because you don't want to pull back on those students' experience. So we're looking at what our options are for travel. I think by the end of the season, maybe that last district game in San Angelo, and hopefully playoffs, If we're traveling to the playoff game, we want to be able to do those things. We have to see what the rules are and what's happening at that point, what the health department says. And there's a lot of consultation, Whitaker said. ECISD Addressing COVID Slide by Ruth Campbell. Because of the pandemic and students not being in school, Ector County ISD expected learning loss from the so-called COVID slide and the established summer slide. Lack of broadband access and students not being in front of a teacher were primary reasons for this. Some researchers across the country had done some analysis of looking at student academic data, and they talked about creating the phenomenon called the COVID slide. Simply, that is the learning loss that potentially could have occurred for students between March and early June, when the last day of school occurred, Murray said in a media call Wednesday. The research indicated that some students could have lost up to a full year in reading and math. Today, in the month of October, we now have data that indicates where the current students are pre-K through 12th grade in ECISD, so that COVID slide that we thought might happen. We're seeing results that actually did happen for many of our students, Murray said. We have kids sitting in fifth grade classrooms today who mathematically they're in the fourth grade or even third grade. We have children sitting in sixth grade classrooms today from a reading perspective. They're reading on a fifth grade or fourth grade level, he added. So COVID impacted our students, and for many, it continues to impact them today and contribute to that learning loss. So we have to do something about that. Tuesday, ECISD announced it will be the first school district in the nation to partner with SpaceX to provide broadband service to families with poor or no internet access. Starting in January 2021, 45 families will be served by SpaceX's Starlink. Assuming that goes well, another 90 families will be added, Murray said. The service won't cost the families anything for a year. The venture is the result of a partnership of ECISD, Chiefs for Change, a national philanthropic organization, PSP, and SpaceX. The cost is $300,000, and Chiefs for Change provided $150,000. According to SpaceX's website, satellites were launched Thursday. Murray said this is targeting kids in a virtual environment and working from home during the school day. He added that the technology will benefit the entire region. One area of learning loss that we're discovering is that many of our remote students in ECISD today is that 35% of our kids who are learning remotely. So those children who have either no internet access or very limited internet access, they're struggling mightily, struggling to engage with their teachers, to engage with their peers, struggling to actually connect. They're struggling to submit assignments. We've seen the failure rates of our remote children are just skyrocketing, Murray said. One reason is because of the lack of quality internet access. At one point, it was the lack of devices, so ECISD has purchased 37,000 devices. We make sure that every child has a device in ECISD. The second thing that we're doing is ensuring that our children have access to high-quality broadband. Starting in the spring, they reached out to the philanthropic community, such as Chiefs for Change, which provided $50,000 to help ECISD connect some families to that, Murray said. Through two local cable companies, ECISD was also able to connect hundreds of families who live in Odessa to provide the high-speed internet access to them. We purchased a little over 1,000 MiFi hotspots to provide to our families. So as a system, we want to make sure that our kids are connected to their teachers. We know that the number one factor that increases student achievement is the teacher. Whatever we can do as an organization to make sure our kids have access to teachers, that's what we are doing. Murray said the 39% of children who don't have internet access falls into two categories. It includes students who do not have internet access and students who have poor or low quality internet access. That is many of our students who live in the south and west parts of our community. The level of internet across that students in the southern portion of Ector County and western portion have access to is very different from those students who live within the Odessa city limits. Our minimum threshold is 100 megabytes of download speed to find that level of speed outside the city limits. Many times, people can't find that speed. That's one of the things that SpaceX is bringing to us, a much higher level of internet accessibility. The speed is much faster with SpaceX for those who live outside of the city of Odessa, Murray said. Inside the city, we have access to a couple of cable providers that do have high quality, high speed access for our students. Of that 39%, many of them simply do not have high quality access to the internet. There is a small percentage of kids that don't have anything at all. There are no options. Today, 65% of students are attending school in person 5 days a week. Those students, Murray said, are having a much better experience than their peers who are learning virtually. So there is a difference between the experiences those two groups are having, he added. Part of the solution also involves developing teachers. Last night, Tuesday, at our board meeting, our human capital team talked about the investments we're making in teachers in ECISD to kind of raise expectations to make sure that each of our children have a high-quality teacher every day. Opportunity culture is an example. So ensuring through opportunity culture that more of our children have access to better teachers is a strategy that we're using. We've filled vacancies. Last year at this time, we had 350 vacancies. This year, we have 38 vacancies. What that means is more of our kids have access to teachers. Last year, those vacancies were filled by substitute teachers. This year, our classrooms have certified teachers in them. That clearly makes a difference in the experiences that our students have. We purchased additional resources this year to ensure that our kids have higher quality digital resources as well as print resources. Our teachers are seeing those in the classroom. Teachers at 14 elementary campuses are participating in a reading academy, learning how to teach more specifically, more effectively, reading strategies. Within our own environment, we're using blended learning strategies. Blended learning is a marriage between great teachers and great technology, Murray said. Also, ECISD is one of 40 districts in Texas that has received a grant from the Texas Education Agency to provide coaches for teachers who are teaching virtually. The TEA grant, he said, will provide online coaches for those teachers while they're teaching, so job-embedded coaching and support for our teacher. Murray said the preliminary work for virtual coaching is going on now, but it has not started yet. On the STAR and end-of-course exams, Murray said, as it stands today, the TEA will be administering them this year in the spring. I know members of our legislature are having conversations, teacher organizations, parent organizations. There is a lot of conversation across the state about that decision, and is that the right decision for our kids? So today we can announce that STAR and end-of-course exam will be given, but that certainly could change between now and the actual administration of that assessment, Murray said. But I will say, in order to make any changes, we have to have permission from the federal government. That means the Texas Education Agency would need to apply for those waivers at the end of December. So decision points are happening within the next several months, he added. Quick hits. Early voting continues through October 30th. The Ector County Courthouse Annex, 1010 East 8th, room 104. Early voting hours are scheduled from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through today. 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday, October 26th through 30th. 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday. Four other voting locations will take place from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through today. 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. October 26th through 28th. 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 29th through 30th at Kellis Turner Community Building, 2230 Sycamore, Westlake Hardware, 4652 East University, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, 2308 Shakespeare Road, and Salinas Community Building, 600 West Clements. So far in Ector County, 21,389 have voted. For sample ballots or more information, call 498-4030 or visit www.co.ector.tx.us/page/ector.elections. Local News Roundup. Coffee for a Cure. The Human Bean locations in Odessa and Midland are celebrating their annual Coffee for a Cure from 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. today. They are donating 100% of the profits from that day to local breast cancer agencies. The money will go directly to the Medical Center Health System Foundation to support breast cancer aid and awareness through our patient navigation program. All of the Human Bean locations across the country are participating in Coffee for a Cure. This is the fourth year the Human Bean has teamed up with the Medical Center Health System Foundation to support breast cancer awareness and treatments here in the Permian Basin. They have raised nearly $10,000 the past 3 years. Visit thehumanbean.com. Fall Fest. It's fall, y'all. Fall Fest has been scheduled from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday at Grande Stadium parking lot, 801 North Loop 250 in Midland. The event will include vendors, safe trick or treating, and food trucks. Admission is free. Visit tinyurl.com/y4gakb38. Honor the Blue. Honor the Blue, a rally to honor Odessa Midland law enforcement, has been scheduled from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday at Momentum Bank Ballpark parking lot, Midland. The Odessa Chuckwagon Gang will be serving lunch to members of the Odessa and Midland Police and Sheriff Departments. Lunch is available to the public for $15 per plate, with proceeds going to Honor the Blue. Bring your signs and wear your shirts to support the men and women who serve and protect. Donations are appreciated and will go toward needs in all departments. For more information, visit honorttheblue.today. Tribute. A tribute to Michael Jackson, featuring Links of Dallas, has been scheduled for 2 to 4 p.m. Saturday at the Carousel Stage at Music City Mall, 4101 East 42nd. Visit www.musiccitymall.net. Free movie night. The Monahans Chamber of Commerce has scheduled a free movie night featuring the Addams Family Saturday at the Ward County Event Center, 1525 East Monahans Parkway in Monahans. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. and movie starts at 7 p.m. Concessions will be available. For more information, call 432-943-2187 or visit monahans.org or facebook.com/Monahans Chamber. East Odessa Block Party. Mission Dorado Baptist Church has scheduled an East Odessa Block Party from 3 to 5 p.m. Sunday at the corner of Faudry Road and Cross B Road. The event will include Meet Your Neighbors, food trucks, popcorn, bounce houses, ladder ball, cornhole, mini golf, oversized Jenga, and more. The event is free.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.